This is Resonance 104.4 FM and on digital, and this is The Sound of Photography, and I'm Frank Watson. And as you know by now, this show deals with all things photographic. My guest this week is Mandy Williams. Welcome to the show, Mandy. It's very good to have you here.
Thanks very much, Frank. I'm really happy to be here.
Good. Mandy is a London-based artist working in photography and video. She studied art history, followed by a graduate diploma in film. She moved to Canada for 12 years working as a freelance photographer and was also represented by a commercial gallery. She returned to London in 2021 and did an MA in photography at the London College of Communication. Her work is held in public collections in the Canadian Museum in Ottawa and the UK Parliament Art Collection. Okay, so that really is a rather skeletal outline of that. There's a lot more to say, and that's why you're here. So you're sort of, some of your life's been quite peripatetic, moving between London, Worthing and Canada. Should we start with Worthing? I think your early life begins there, but it also you've been making work about Worthing for quite a few years. So tell us about Worthing and your relationship.
Well, yeah, as a teenager, we used to go down to Worthing, myself and my parents, and visit an aunt there. And one time we went down to visit this aunt, and we went to another road and stopped outside a house. And my mother turned around to me and said, "What do you think of this house? Isn't it beautiful? This is our new home." And I was 13 at the time. I was completely shocked, and it was the first I'd heard of it. I didn't have brothers or sisters, so it was just literally myself and my parents moving there. So it was a huge upheaval to go.
So they just told you you were going to be moving. You didn't get sort of acknowledged in the setup.
No, not at all. And so moved down during the summer holidays to go into the third year. And it was quite funny because my mum wanted me to mix with kids, so she sent me out to the beach for this event, which was run by the Young Conservatives, which is completely, I was never anything, you know, central. I was always left wing, so it was just bizarre. So I had a kind of a fractious relationship with Worthing. And it was hard at school, you know. Kids, you go in, if you're not super confident, you get a bit, left out, shall we say. And I had escapist sort of strategies. I went up to London a lot, developed a bit of a second life up there. And so, yeah, I wasn't happy to be in Worthing. But later on, my parents moved back there, you know, after my dad retired. And I used to go and enjoy visiting them, and I began to shoot work in Worthing and actually was supported by the museum, and I had a solo show at the Worthing Museum and then some work exhibited on the seafront. So it was quite a change from those initial days, you know, being a teenager.
It came out all right.
It did, yeah.
Even the most, I mean, Worthing isn't the most hippest of coastal towns, but you found things there that were, you know, that you could, that sort of stirred your imagination.
Yeah, I mean, as a teenager, sort of going, oh my God, what am I doing here? I used to go down to the beach shelters and sit in them and sort of look at the sea and think, oh, take me away from here. And when I was making work about Worthing, much later on, you know, I was often working around the beach shelters. So I had a series called Frame, which was people moving past the windows of the beach shelter and made a video of that. And Sea Level, which was another series, and some other work besides. So, it became inspiring.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. It's funny, the blandest of places sort of arouses the imagination in a way.
Yeah.
because you're sort of understimulated in many ways. You retreat into the sort of imaginative sort of aspects of
that's true.
Your life.
Yeah, what can I make of it?
I think we're going to talk a lot more about landscape, but you have an affinity with landscape and in terms of making images and stuff, but you're particularly interested in the relationship between sort of language and landscape. And would you like to say, just introduce a bit about how that works for you?
Well, certainly in a later work called Chalk, it was specifically about landscape into language. And that was working with the idea of chalk being used as a conduit for communication. But I think, landscape as a way of expressing ideas has always been very interesting to me. So it's not just a passive landscape, it's metaphor for ideas and being used for expressions of grief and time passing, and also for metaphor of political ideas and talking around environmental issues as well.
So in a way you're very much projecting onto the landscape aspects that force the viewer to think about the relationship to landscape, not just as a sort of pastoral issue, but sort of other more, well, shall we say, deeper issues in a way.
Yeah, I think it's definitely using it as a way to express ideas. And certainly that's come forward after the Brexit referendum and using landscape in a particular way. But even before that, and with the work in Worthing, which was earlier.
So you're drawn to coastal areas, aren't you?
I seem to be, always going back to the coast. And In Vancouver, I never did any work. Although it was based on the sea, I never did any work around the coast there. So it was very different.
But it's quite spectacular compared with the Sussex and Kent coast, isn't it? I mean, that Pacific coast is pretty, pretty spectacular.
It is. Vancouver Island and Tofino, it's very wild and beautiful. But, I had no associations with it and no sort of emotional impacts with it, and it's always been tied to English landscapes one way.
So in a way your identity is very much sort of focused on England, really, in a way that perhaps Canada didn't sort of arouse an interest, or an affinity might be a better word.
I think that's because, I went out to Canada and I had planned to just stay for 5 months, and I ended up staying for 12 years. So it's a very long period. And it was, a remarkable experience in many ways. But I never once felt that I truly belonged there. I had huge nostalgia for England, which is probably misplaced in a lot of ways. I really miss the landscape very much, the patchwork hills and the cliffs, and I just couldn't get involved in the Canadian landscape in the same way.
Do you think you needed to be away from England to sort of to have the interest you have now? Do you think, it might not have happened had you not been a sort of away from the country?
I think, I might not have focused on the landscape so much, actually, because prior to going out, I hadn't really done that. I think coming back, it's sort of been a reappraisal of that nostalgia that I had, which has actually got tainted over the years with things that have happened here politically.
So maybe you needed to be a sort of temporary outsider.
It's a weird thing living in another country and sort of feeling that you don't totally fit in, and then coming back to your country and the joy of being there initially sort of fading away a little bit through the things that that become prominent, that you notice more.
Okay, we're going to play a piece of music you've chosen by Sonic Youth. It's Youth Against Fascism. Do you want to? Should we just play the music, or do you want to make a comment about it?
Just to say that Sonic Youth is a band that I've seen several times, and I was lucky to see them in 1990 play with Nirvana, and it was a great concert. So,
okay.
Another stomach turns. Yeah, you get a burn.
Listening to Resonance 104.4 FM and on digital. This is still The Sound of Photography, and I'm still talking with Mandy Williams. We're going to start talking about your work, and you are both a photographer and a video maker or a filmmaker. I'm probably going to stand corrected there. Do you see yourself as sort of moving between the two, or primarily a photographer, or vice versa?
I suppose I see myself primarily as a photographer because it's what I've done mostly. Most of my work has been photography. However, you know, I studied film at Goldsmiths and I like to think of film as my heart projects in a way. So, you know, you get so involved with making a film and what goes into it. So I get very attached to my films. Whether they're good or bad, I'm very attached to them. And I feel very strongly about making video. And sometimes that comes at the end of a photography project, or it's just a new way to approach something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a way, it enables you to do more things with images. Do you find that in terms of editing and sound?
Absolutely. I mean, I love editing, and I think editing is a huge part of it, and working with sound and doing the narration I really love as well. The thing I like least is directing, but all the rest of it, yeah, I love it.
So we're going to talk quite a bit about something, a piece of work you call Chalk, which doesn't arouse an immediate fascination, I must admit, but you're going to sort of enthuse us about, you know, what is the interest in chalk?
Yeah, well, I started to make this video chalk in 2021, shortly after I finished my MA in photography. And I'd shot a lot of the chalk landscapes in Kent and Sussex, so I was familiar with them. And, yeah, I just... The subtitle of the film is Landscape to Language. So, as I mentioned earlier, I'm very interested in how chalk is communicating ideas. And that can be through classroom learning, sort of the repetition of traditional ideas.
It's chalk and talk, isn't it?
Chalk and talk, which, you know, people can reassess as they get older and kind of look back on what they were taught. But also the hill figures that are in the landscape, which, you know, there's the prehistoric Uffington horse in Oxfordshire. A lot of these have myths involved with them. So in that particular one, it says if you stand on its eye and turn three times...
The eye of a horse, is it?
Yes, the eye of this horse, your wish will come true. And then Cern Abbas, which is this giant figure in Dorset, a fertility figure, which goes back to Saxon times. Women in the Victorian times who wanted to conceive would go and sleep on the hillside and hopefully dream of having a baby and then become pregnant. So, you know, it's...
They're loaded in myth, aren't they?
Loaded in myth.
And
I sort of thought, you know, if you lived in a village with this towering chalk figure, which often the chalk figures were about monarchy as well, you know, coronations of kings or crowns or... religious icons as well. If you lived in a village that you didn't travel much, and you had this towering figure, it was a bit like a reinforcement of a political, well, sort of status quo of monarchy and religion that was being fed to you every day, like propaganda.
And the fact they're towering over a hill, you can imagine it sort of, you get up and you're in your village and you look out the window and it's sort of elevated, isn't it?
You know,
it's quite powerful, I would imagine. You know, I mean, even when you drive past them today, there's something captivating about them.
It is. And I mean, I could say tons about it, really. But the other thing that interested me was the fact that the chalk cliffs had been used as a whiteboard for, at night for projections. And these were political projections.
This is near Dover, isn't it?
Dover, yeah. So the fascist group Patriotic Alternative had projected Migrants Go Home, and then Global Justice Now, and led by Donkeys, had projected pro-migrant messages. So there was this communication going on onto the landscape.
So the chalk cliffs become a sort of screen, don't they? So another example, as you say, sort of landscape into language.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also I'm thinking, you know, going back to school where, you know, the teacher was always writing on the board. I don't know if that happens anymore. I just think chalk has just sort of disappeared. But my memory of that is when teachers got fed up with a student, they'd chuck chalk or even the board rubber at the student. So they were, my memory is that they were weapons as well as educational sort of assets.
So. Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so I just found there was so much to say about chalk, and I really had to cut down the ideas to those sort of specifics because, you know, it's been used in forensics as well. It's got these mythical, magical properties, and it was sort of trying to keep within the ideas of communication, basically, throughout. But yeah, I loved working on that and sort of made a storyboard, shot things, and then had a narrator come and work with me. He has a beautiful Irish accent, and then sort of
built... So it's like a voiceover, isn't it?
Voiceover, yeah. And
so give us a feel of how that you're working in terms of images and voice and sound. Is that possible?
I suppose what I was doing is making lists, really, of the ideas that I wanted to convey. And then I was making, it sounds really boring, but like a table where so you'd have the topics on the left-hand side, then images and then sound. And sometimes that would immediately suggest images or sound, but otherwise you had to work towards those. And then I had a script that I was writing, which kind of removed bits, put bits in, and then, you know, work towards populating against those with sounds or whatever. So I had the sound of chalk being scratched, which becomes quite menacing. It's turned up really high in a couple of different places. And that's how I usually do work on my my videos. So I'm sort
of... there's a sort of democratic sort of system. It's not like I'll start with the script, then find the images. Mm. It becomes layered on the table and then just pull things as they sort of come to you.
Yeah, I mean, the ideas are changed a lot, you know. I had a lot of things that didn't make it into the final cut. But once the script is set, then I will go back to the images and the sound and really think about what I need to put in and how I can be experimental with it.
Right. OK. And at one point there's just literally pieces of chalk on the screen, aren't they? They're quite abstract.
Yeah.
So it moves from something that's quite abstract into something where, you know, there's a relationship between the cliffs of Dover, mm-hmm. and then there's these sort of... It's almost like a collage of images, would you say, or is that... Would you describe it as that?
I suppose there's a lot of different ideas at play, and one other one that I hadn't sort of mentioned is the fact that chalk has been used as a muse for artists and writers, you know, over time. So what was nice was to be able to extract texts from Shakespeare, Matthew Arnold, Edward Thomas, who's a poet, and kind of reference them and include their words, which of course are beautiful, into the narrative, and then slip between those my own words about
it. Your own sort of voiceover, yeah.
Yeah. And then at the end, it's sort of, you know, I mean, the chalk cliffs have got such symbolism behind them and how chalk has been used, which I can come on to later. But the video is asking, what kind of country do we want, you know, after Brexit? Do we want to look backwards or are we looking forwards to new narratives? You know, are we going to be progressive?
Yeah. So in a way, that's the message that you want to get across, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And by bringing in sort of past and future ideas, you know, and what's going on at present, with, as you say, with Brexit.
Yeah.
But also you're weaving in the sort of historical and the geological.
Yes.
I mean, we should say these videos are only 6 minutes, aren't they?
Yeah, they're quite...
You know, it's not exactly an epic, so they're quite... I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, you needed to watch it quite a few times, and I guess because it's in a gallery, you have that chance to sort of view it quite a few times to allow it to sort of sink in.
I think what's nice is I can go back to that video and watch it and I still think, yeah, I still like it, you know, and it's about 4 or 5 years old now.
Right, okay.
But, yeah, that was the meaning I was trying to get across.
Yeah. And do you look at, like, not particularly chalk, but other pieces of work and think, oh, I wouldn't mind tweaking it or editing it? I mean, is that something you would do? Or once it's finished, that is it and you move on?
Well, no, I certainly look back at other videos that I've made and I thought, God, I'd love to tweak these. There was one that I made a long time ago, which I thought was basically a good idea. It was about private grief and public spectacle. And it was in the wake of the Soham murders.
Right.
And I would like to have gone back and tweaked that. I mean, I think it's too late now. But, yeah, that's always a possibility.
Should be, yeah. We're going to talk about another piece, another video now called Vanishing. And I couldn't work out, are these just photographs or it's a video piece as well? Is it?
Oh, no, it's a video. So I shot in... Well, on Kent and Sussex coast, and I used archive footage as well. So I wanted to make an environmental video, and I did find that a bit intimidating because obviously it's a subject so many artists have been representing and been concerned with. So it was like, what aspects can I bring out that perhaps are, you know, not so common in a way? And I centred on the role of photography during the climate crisis and also, well, the fossil fuel industry, which, of course, is a present one. But I was looking at the Kent coast and the history of fossil fuels in Kent. There were 4 collieries, and I went and filmed the exterior of the one that exists still as a building, which is Snowdown Colliery.
I didn't know where Snowdown was. Tell us where it is.
Yeah, it's near... I think it's near Aylsham. I've been there, but it's in Kent. It's north of Dover.
Okay.
It's off the... A2.
Right.
And
because at one point you have sort of drone footage of just a sort of almost like an outline or a plan of where the colliery was.
Oh, that's a separate one. So was Whitehaven in Cumbria, which was a proposed development for a mine, which has now been shelved, thankfully. It wasn't, you know, I couldn't possibly go up there and learn how to operate a drone and for the same money as actually using an image bank. So I used image bank for that one.
Okay. But
also listened to podcasts of miners who had worked in the mines in that area and their conflicted views on, you know, the need for working for economics and supporting families and the damage to the environment that they knew that it may cause. So, you know.
So these would be quite elderly miners, would they?
Well, I suppose they were active during the time of the miners' strike, so yes, I suppose they wouldn't perhaps be going back to the mines to work themselves. They might be retired, yes, but their children might be looking for work, but that has now been put to bed, that one.
Mm. Okay. So you're very much looking at the sort of erosion, aren't you, and environmental degradation, and tell us more about that aspect.
I filmed the Kent coast particularly. There's been a lot of erosion where I go, Samfaho, there's been coastal erosion there, and also the North Kent coast, which is clay. There's been houses that have slipped into the sea. So, I wanted to represent that idea. Vanishing's in seven sequences. So the first sequence is sort of Berlin Gap area, where it's showing that landscape is really an image that people go there because of the eroded cliffs, and they want a backdrop for, you know, a selfie or something. And
the tourist industry really bites.
Yeah, it does. So people go there and they're just filming the background because it looks neat and there's a story they can tell about themselves. And then the other sequences are about erosion in the different coasts. Mm. I do talk about the history of Kent erosion. There was a drowned village called Hampton-on-Sea, and there was an archive photograph of that I tried to recreate by visiting the present-day site of where that would have been and then dissolving them.
When was that? When did that village disappear?
That was about 1920.
Oh, yeah, so within 100 years.
Yeah.
And where was that near?
It's near Herne Bay.
Okay, so I'd never heard of that.
I hadn't until, you know, I was kind of researching for the piece. And there's great archive pictures of these roads. I mean, and the pub actually still exists. So it's useful for finding, you know, for pinpointing where it would have been, etc. And so in the video, it sort of dissolves into the present day, but you've got the water coming down. I also did some other archive research of going to Kent. I think it was the museum in Dover, and getting museum paintings of where the trains were brought in Samfaho, and the development of industry, you know, etc., and bringing that in.
Samfaho is now a nature reserve, am I right?
Yeah.
Is that the one where you go down into the tunnel under the cliff?
Yeah.
It's a really strange place. So you're driving along the A2, which is the main sort of lorry route to Europe and back again.
Yeah.
And then you can divert off, and then you're forced to go in this, wait till the traffic lights, because the tunnel is only one lane.
Yeah.
And you go through this tunnel, it's like a sort of rebirthing almost.
It is.
Then you come out below the cliffs of this flat landscape, which was once a mining area.
And
well, to describe it to us a bit more.
Well, now when you go, I mean, it's lovely seawall, and you can get down to the beach and be right by the cliffs, which is why I've gone there, you know, many, many times to film. But it's also interesting as a place where the far right have gone frequently look out over the, you know, for vessels coming in. So
it's sort of an act of surveillance.
It's sort of, I can't think which fascist group it was, but I know there's been several that have been down there kind of patrolling.
Right.
Samfaho is a very interesting place to go. And, you know, I actually went there last time about a month ago, so I'm still going there.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to play a piece of, quite fitting music by PJ Harvey. It's called England. it's probably explained it all, hasn't she? I mean, she has a real political interest in things around sort of environment and landscape. And I know she's contributed to filmmakers, haven't you? I was thinking, is it Cleo Barnard? I think she contributed to one of those films.
Oh, I don't know, but I do love her work, and that album is fantastic.
Oh, let's hear it. This is Sound of Photography, and we're continuing to speak with Mandy Williams. We're going to talk about another piece of work entitled Sea Level, and this goes back to what we began to speak about in the first part of the show about Worthing, and it's really your return to Worthing, isn't it, and seeing it with fresh eyes. This would have been after Canada.
Yes.
So in a way, being away from it, maybe, and being more adult, seeing it through a different set of eyes. Also, it involved your family at a time which was not easy, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I began the series in 2016, and it followed on from a series called Frame, so I had worked with beach shelters before. This particular work started at the time that my dad was in hospital, and he was in there for 7 weeks, and then died. So I would visit him in hospital and then go up to the sea and photograph while he was resting. And I suppose the work has quite a melancholy feel to it. Mm. I went to the beach shelters and I was photographing the traces on the glass and the marks that were left there.
Sort of small acts of vandalism, would you say?
There were definitely graffiti and just sort of detritus that people had left. So the absence of people who had been there.
So just to give a picture, you're looking through from behind the beach shelter onto the sea through these bits of perspex, or is it glass?
Yeah, glass,
and
yes.
And these scratch marks. So it's almost another example of you sort of landscape into language, isn't it, really?
Yes.
So in a way, there's a continuity there with other pieces of work.
I think that's right, actually, yes. And, I mean, it's quite fascinating being at the sea and being at the beach shelters and seeing people sitting there and just mesmerised by the sea. And I did that too. So just the light, you know, the fact that it's been talked about as God's waiting room, you know, people...
I think that's a Philip Larkin quote, yeah. God's waiting room. I mean, we all know about, you know, you see old people sitting in these shelters.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost... Well, you can see what Larkin is sort of attempting to sort of...
Yeah, mesmerised, you know, and just kind of like the light on the waves and the repetition of the sound of the sea. Mm. And, yeah, I carried on working with that work for a few years, but it did sort of have this melancholy feel, and it was always... The beach shelters were empty, it was always high tide.
So you would go there at a specific time... So there was a continuity.
Yes, yeah. Always.
So in a way, the waves are coming at you through this sort of window with this sort of scratching over top, isn't
it? Yeah, yes, exactly. And I did find it sort of I find it a bit of a mournful, melancholy work, but it was about time passing, you know, and the marks that have been left. Mm. And I did go on to make... a series, for Worthing Museum, which was called Trace, and that took the same idea, but it was shooting when the light was on the water, particularly with the marks on the glass, and then having it directly printed onto plexiglass. So it's much more textural, much more the sense of actually being with the glass, you know, and suspending these plexiglasses, which were different coloured, like sea-coloured.
So these are like still images as opposed to the video?
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And how do you see that working differently? Is it because it becomes more contemplative?
Well, with the ones on plexi, which were suspended square images of on plexi, just plexiglass with the scratching and the light, yeah, I think they were more contemplative, actually. And when I did the video frame, that aspect of... people sitting there, and it started at a wide angle image and sort of became closer and closer to an abstract close-up. That was very contemplative as well. So maybe sea level was less, but it was about seasides out of season, you know, the winter kind of melancholy of...
It does make you think of that. We should really have played it, the Morrissey song.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Every day seems like Sunday, is that it? I think it is, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
But you also did another video, if I got this right, of another video of these people passing, so it becomes... And they're sort of silhouetted or they're out of focus.
Yeah, that actually is the frame video. So that sort of preceded sea level.
Okay.
And I started, I was very obvious of what I was doing. I set up a tripod in front of the shelter and was shooting. So I had people walking in front of the camera, you know, and the shelter and people sitting down. And then kind of moving the tripod in nearer and just concentrating. I mean, a lot of people don't notice they're being filmed. You know, they're looking at the sea anyway. And, and then just concentrating on a much tighter single glass plane, really, again, getting that texture in and the sculptural forms of people sitting there and passing by.
It's quite ghostly.
Yeah.
You know, these figures are sort of... What's the glass sort of frosted, you know, so it was... Or was it just out of focus?
I think it was the effects of the weathering and the light on the glass. So, it wasn't frosted, but it's very textural.
Mm.
And I like it when the forms become sculptural. You know, it's less about individual personalities and people going past, you know. It's mass of humanity.
And did you show that piece at the Worthing Museum?
I did, yeah. Yes.
And what was the reception like? I mean, did people... Because in a way it's quite, well, again, saying it's rather melancholic. Did people engage with it in a way you wanted?
It's hard to know because I was delighted to have that show, and it's the only museum show I've had, you know, in England. But it came with lockdown. So the show was supposed to be 4 months and it shut after 2 months. So I did get nice comments in the visitor book. That's the only way, you know, there wasn't a private view or anything.
No, no.
But I did have sea level up in there, the trace pieces on plexi, the frame, individual photographs of people walking by, and the video and sea level. So, yeah, it was all to do with Worthing.
Good old Worthing. Another piece you've made is called Beyond Land. This involves searching causeways around mainly the sort of southern part of England. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And I was so sort of shocked by the Brexit referendum result, you know, even though obviously there'd been a lot of talk and propaganda about it. I was surprised at the outcome and felt, you know, God, you know, I'm more European than English at this point. I don't agree with what's happened. And I wanted to make some work that was about the separation from Europe and about this sort of increase in island mentality that had come to the fore again, this little England. And so I was sort of researching tidal islands, and there's many, I think there's about 43 that you can walk by foot, but a lot of them are in Scotland. So yeah, I went to lots of different places, Northey Island, OC,
Hayling. The two islands in Essex, isn't it?
It is, yes.
And the one in Tankerton, which is near Whitstable, right?
Yes, that's right. And I did end up focusing on Tankerton because it's incredible. I mean, it stretches out about half a mile and the pathway is revealed at low tide. So the first time I saw it, I just couldn't believe there was these people, just lines of people walking out into the sea, one after another. I was like, what the hell's going on?
No, it's the photographs, which you can see on Mandy's website. Which just remind us what I think I forgot what the website to include the website.
Yeah, just mandywilliams.com.
Yeah, so you can see those pictures there. But it's really strange. These people are wading out to sea in long lines. So it's like an exodus, isn't it?
It is.
There's something almost biblical about it.
Exactly, yeah. It's like people leaving England, moving towards Europe, you know.
So a reverse of what the sort of politics was going on about people entering the country. That seemed to be about white people leaving.
Yeah, well, yes.
And it works on so many levels, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A very simple imagery, but it really resonates when you see it.
I mean, I just thought it was remarkable, especially when people, you know, are dressed, you know, and they're carrying bags and things. It's like, God, you know, and they just go on for ages and ages. You know, you might have 30 people in a line.
Yeah. So this would have been as the tide went out and they felt safe.
Yes.
So they'd obviously timed it, so they knew what they were doing. It wasn't... Because otherwise you look at it and you think this is like a sort of lemming situation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, what are people doing? Yeah, just... going out never to be seen again, you know. I mean, I went down in all weathers because, you know, I got quite obsessed with photographing, which is what happens with all projects, you know, so go down again and again. But people weren't going out in the winter to the same extent. But I did shoot over several years down there, and I did shoot some video, but I never was really happy with what I got on the video.
So that is just a photographic piece?
That's just photographic, yeah.
And did people ask you what you were up to, or were you sort of, you were standing back from them, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, and I sometimes was standing in the water as well with the tripod. I mean, tripods got ruined over the years, so rusty. So I was filming from the water sometimes from the shore as well. Yeah, nobody sort of says, you know, what are you doing? I don't want to be, you know.
It probably helps that you had the backs of people as they left, so it wasn't confrontatory in any way, was it?
No. You wouldn't know who it was.
Okay, we're going on to another piece of music. This is called Burn the Witch by Radiohead. I don't know, are the words indicative of... Or you just like the music?
I like the music. I wanted to include something by Radiohead. Right. I think the words do relate to the times happening today, things that are happening today, actually. Okay.
glasses on wooden doors. If you float, you burn. Loose talk around tables. Abandon all reason. Avoid all eye contact.
Listening to Resonance 104.4 FM and on digital, and we're still talking to Mandy Williams, and we're going to move from more, well, we've talked a lot about video work, and we're going to talk about a photographic project, which is maybe your first love, I'm not sure, but this is a piece of work called Disrupted Landscapes, and we return to the Kent coast, which you're obviously heavily drawn to, and I can understand why, having photographed it quite a lot myself. I mean, there's something about the chalk cliffs and that landscape, the undulating sort of landscape. It is quite hypnotising, isn't it?
It is, yes, yes. So I have been I have been photographing, filming there a lot, particularly since 2019, actually.
And this work, Disrupted Landscape, was part of your MA, and it was started in 2020, is that right?
2019, yeah. Yes, that's right. And so, yes, I sort of started with making a video, but also went off into making this photographic series, Disrupted Landscapes, and then finishing with a free newspaper as well. So the project as a total was called England, and involved, you know, quite a lot of different research.
I mean, all your projects, we should say, are very, you know, astonishing amount of research. I mean, I think at one point you're even interviewing EU... What, EU representatives, is that right?
Well, certainly for the newspaper, I was interviewing people who'd moved here, who'd lived in, who'd come here from the EU, yes, and from further afield. And for the video which went with my MA, which was called Inward Island, I did interview volunteer coast guards, lifeboat managers in Dover, and government officials actually who worked for the coast guard.
Were you sort of just there to chat and see what came out, or did you have a sort of an agenda? Like if you went to a lifeguard, yeah, you just go up to them and say, "Tell me all about it." Or was it, you know, what were you trying to sort of acquire through the research?
Well, it's tricky because actually the lifeboat station in Dover, and also the government body, you have to be very clear about what you're doing. You have to go through communications departments. And so, yes, I mean, I wasn't going to come out and say I'm making a political work and, you know, I'm interested in the migrants coming to England, the undocumented migrants coming. No,
So I guess they're wary of what, right-wing press and the sort of
the
stigma attached around boats landing. And, you know, I guess you talked to people who were rescuing these migrants who were in the channel, is that right?
Yeah, so I, with the lifeboat manager, it was great. We went down into a boat and he showed me the different controls and I got to film what that looks like, you know, and the different radar and things like that. Same as actually with the volunteer Coast Guards. I went and I have sound recordings of the beeps and, you know, directions coming in, navigation things and their tools. And yeah, I did speak to them. I mean, I didn't use the material because actually things came up, particularly with the volunteer Coast Guards, that would have been, you know, these people were very nice and they gave me their time. And
were they sympathetic to the migrants or did you detect sort of an antipathy towards the people coming over?
I think it's hard to know.
Were they being discreet?
Well, I think some of them had a Navy background. You know, they had worked in Marines. And I think they were on the lookout for boats. And I don't know from what perspective, to be honest, whether... But I only used what I felt that I could ethically use. But, you know, I was just very interested to find out. And I spoke to the government person about, you know, how the channel is divided up into different zones, who has control of what areas and things that. And one of the most interesting research was talking to the Kent Refugee Action Network and spoke to Bridget there and had a very long discussion with her. So, yeah, it kind of informed the work that I did for the MA.
Yeah. So let's talk about the video itself. It starts with a view of the cliffs, doesn't it? And a figure in the sort of distance.
Is this the Inward Islands work? Or
yes. Oh, no, oh, no, sorry, I've got completely off track. I've gone back to a video.
Yeah.
No, so these are the photographs. Sorry, I stand corrected. So the photographs we see are a collage of the pictures you took on the Kent coast, but then you went to NASA. This is one small step for woman. So, you know, you pick up the story here about why NASA is involved in the Kent coast.
Yeah. Well, this was for the MA work. I'd been interviewing people, and one of the persons that I interviewed had come here from France, and they'd lived in England for 50 years. And they said, you know, after the Brexit result, which they thought was disgusting, they felt like an alien coming from Mars rather than somebody just coming across the channel. And so I thought about that, you know, and there's other tie-ins, you know, the Home Office was called the Alien Office at one point prior. So I researched landforms on NASA, and of course some of them are very similar to our coastal landscape forms, and how I could drop them in and layer them with the Kent Coast landscapes to sort of create, from my perspective, a landscape that was harmful, a harmful environment, and one that wouldn't sustain health and was sort of toxic. So that was the rationale for using those landforms. And I continue using those in disrupted landscapes up to about 2021. And some of them were quite overt and some were much more subtle layering. And that was the idea that perhaps we get used to this sort of hostility and it becomes, you know, we become less aware of what's going on.
Right. So this, if on the wall there would be these photographs that are framed with these, and the photographs are interrupted by these sort of, I don't know how to describe it, black blocks, both in the picture and between each frame, aren't they? I mean, you can explain it better than me, but having heard you talk, I've got a clearer picture now. So this idea of disrupting is really important, isn't it?
Yes. So the black bars were brought into the images to represent sort of bands of exclusion, barriers, which existed in the English landscape anyway through enclosure and, you know, rights of way and various other things.
So you're just making them physical rather than being more...
Yes, I was making it overt, really. Yeah. And then when the work was on display for an exhibition that actually never opened because of lockdown, I had got these black wooden bars that I put between the images where, in my mind, there were shifts in the degree of degradation of the image. So it sort of made sense to me where these black bars were brought in. And yeah, I've been working with Disrupted Landscapes since then. I'm still sort of working on it and changing.
So it's an ongoing project.
It is an ongoing project.
And the picture we can see on your website is just a small selection. So how does it pan out, or is that too early to say?
Well, it's changed into, there have been sort of triptychs that have come out of it, where there's a sort of narrative that goes between the three images. There's sort of a development called chalk shadow, where, you know, and that's playing on the fact of what chalk symbolises for people, this sort of nationalist idea, the Albion, and how it's been co-opted by the far right. And it's, I'm showing the shadow side of it. So basically there's this dark chalk that's sort of at play in some of the images as well. And then more recently, sort of drawing on the images in post-production to sort of this a layering of inversion and sort of negative and positivity within the image and things like that. So, yeah, there's been various strands, but, yeah, I do want to sort of take it in a new direction. And usually what happens is after a while a door will open and you have a new pathway.
A new take on it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show, so I'm looking forward to seeing the next show.
Thanks very much, Frank.
And so thank you, Mandy Williams, for coming in. Thank you for Peter for producing the show. We're going to play out with another piece of music. This is Beth Gibbons, and this is called Rewind. So just...